My name is John Bristow. I'm a developer evangelist on Christian's team. And I'd like to thank you for, first of all, coming out to Align IT to hear more about some of the possible solutions that and situations you may face as a developer manager. In this session here, we're going to be talking about delivering high-quality software through Agile. And you know, Christian did a really good job of setting the story. The world we face right now is complex. And as a result, we need to make sure that we can manage that complexity by merging the three critical aspects of any project we have in our organization, which are people, processes, and tools. And so in this session here, we're going to focus more on the last one, which is around the tooling. I'm going to give you a high-level overview of what's possible with solutions we have at Microsoft, namely Team Foundation Server, Visual Studio, and along the way, we'll explore some other things that may be of interest to you. I think it's somewhat relevant to a lot of folks. Maybe some of you have actually seen this slide or maybe this photo online. It really does speak to a situation we have in our industry today, which is oftentimes the solutions we build are either not what was expected, or they fail to meet the requirements, or they're either over budget or are delivered way late. And sadly, I think a lot of times in our industry, this actually represents the reality. And it's unfortunate because a lot of times we want to ensure that we're delivering, as Christian said, the right thing at the right time within the right scope and budget. And so it's kind of sad, but in this session here, I hope to provide you with an overview of some of the tools that you can use in your organization to not only help you manage projects, but also manage them well. And to do that, what I would like to do is actually give you a bit of an overview of what's possible with Visual Studio and Team Foundation Server. So let's jump into our demonstration laptop here. I am running a fictitious example of what's possible with TFS. This is a fictitious site known as Tailspin Toys. The VPC here that I'm running, you can actually grab off of our download site, which is at microsoft.com/downloads. And in this scenario here, I'm playing the role of a project manager who's operating and maintaining this website. We sell model airplanes. We also sell paper airplanes. As you can see, as I go through the site, customers can come here and purchase the various items we have for sale. Obviously, given the fact this is a website, I want to make sure that I'm managing the people in my organization effectively and in a manner that allows them to be productive. For that purpose, I'll use a variety of tools, but one of the tools that we have at Microsoft is obviously Team Foundation Server. Team Foundation Server provides a whole host of information and telemetry about your projects. So what this enables you to effectively do is get a better sense of what's happening and who's doing what on your projects. What you see here is the SharePoint portal provided out of the box from Team Foundation Server. When you provision a new project, one of the things we do is we establish this portal so that you can get telemetry, information, analytics about how your project's doing so that you can make informed decisions. Here you can see I have a task burndown listed by days. I also have a listing of product backlogs. These are items that are either resolved or left pending. We scroll over to the right. All through the browser, I can see things like project work items that I'm working on, any recent builds that have been iterated on. So, for example, if I'm iterating and I'm utilizing continuous integration, this process that for every check-in, there's a build and test run, I can see the results of those builds quickly and easily through a web browser. This turns out to be really, really nice because for a lot of folks in the room, maybe you're not comfortable using, say, an IDE like Visual Studio. You want to use tools like like Internet Explorer, or you want to use tools like Excel. These are the tools that we tend to live in, and so as a result, we want to make sure that you're facilitated by providing those capabilities within those tools. In addition to that, I can go and see a variety of other analytics related to the project itself. We have a whole host of project reports that we create right out of the box for you to use. You can jump to the various parts and pieces of the dashboard that we provide here. So you can take a look at all the Excel reports. You can take a look at the reports that are available through Excel. We can take a look at documents. There's the ability to facilitate wikis and all kinds of other capabilities like that. To complement this process, of course, we'll utilize a tool like Visual Studio. Visual Studio 2010 is the premium IDE for developers building software today. allows you to build not only applications for the cloud, but also for the phone, for the desktop. Really, it's the one IDE that your developers will come to use over and over again. And that actually has a really big benefit in the sense that it's one IDE that they need to know, so they can port their existing skills from platform to platform. So as your business needs change, you have the ability and the agility to change with those needs. So here within the IDE, I can simply go ahead and iterate through the various parts and pieces of my project. That's surfaced out through this facility here called Team Explorer, which is a window, a lens, a 50,000-foot view of my project that gives me a sense of what are the work items that I'm working on, like, for example, bugs, feature requests, etc. What are some of the various pieces of documentation, the artifacts, the Excel spreadsheets, the Word docs that I need to read as a developer or maybe a project manager? What are the various reports and builds that are being generated? Of course, source code as well. I think there's a bit of a mistake that people make, which is when they see Team Foundation Server for the first time, they think automatically, well, this is just a replacement for VSS. And that's actually not the case. Team Foundation Server is very much, much more than source control. Yes, there's a critical aspect relating to source control, but TFS provides a whole host of other capabilities, which we'll see in this presentation. One question that came up, and Christian cited this during his first session, was this ability to do really intelligent debugging in the form of IntelliTrace. Here I'm utilizing a solution that is really the composite of my application. You remember I was building out a website. These are all the various projects, the parts and pieces that go into my site here. And I have the ability as a developer to go ahead and issue out builds and build out projects and start seeing how these solutions are being built. One thing that we've added recently to Visual Studio 2010 is the ability to get the form of black box testing for my application. So I can go into a facility here like IntelliTrace, and you can kind of think of this as like a black box flight recorder for an airplane. What this is doing is it's actually tracing and watching all of the series of steps that occur within your program so that after the fact you can get a sense of what happened. You can kind of think of it as like CSI Miami, right? This is where the part where you put the sunglasses on, you try and trace back the murder. What happened when the program crashed? How did we get to this scenario that is an edge case? How can we figure out what happened? And so if you've done any programming in C or you've done any programming in C++, this is sort of the equivalent of doing printf statements, right, where you'd litter your code with all these debug statements and system.diagnostic statements. You can now get rid of all that with a feature like IntelliTrace. Moreover, you can utilize IntelliTrace within your testing environments. Testers can use IntelliTraces, create mini dumps on processes, attach them, and then associate that with bug reports, so that people can recreate the scenario that was generated during a bug and produce that reliably and predictably within your test environment. So IntelliTrace, in turn, will be a huge capability for not only testers, but also for you as managers working with people to ensure that they're getting the exact same scenarios that your customers are facing. So we could spend, obviously, a whole host of time in here kind of taking a look at the tool, but I want to jump back to the slides to kind of give you a sense of what we're really dealing with here and kind of at the same time give you a lap around of some of the scenarios that people are facing today. So part of our challenge here is to address this stereotype. We don't want this to be the reality in an industry. And it's particularly important, especially in the next few slides, because we have a lot of stereotypes against us as developer managers. So if you take a look at the conventional wisdom around software development, there are a lot of commonalities you see in organizations today. Everything is planned early, and there's a high degree of fidelity. Requirements are frozen before design and are never to be changed. You forbid coding prior to a detailed design review. You use a higher level or programming language or a higher order programming language. There must be complete unit testing before any integration. These and other sorts of conventions that people are aspiring to in the field of software development have some issues. And in order for us to address these issues, we need to see what problems lie within some of those conventional thinking. So some of the problems we see here is obviously we have requirements that are poorly understood, and that ends up us as teams delivering on the wrong application. That's really, really bad. We don't want to deliver the wrong thing or set the wrong expectations. Another thing that comes up is the fact that because of poor design, we don't account for what some of us may think of edge cases. So the typical scenario is if you're writing a website that sells, I don't know, sock puppets, or better yet, CDs or DVDs. Imagine you're back in the 2000 era, and CDs are all the rage, and you decide that on a certain day you're going to sell all your all the CDs you have in your catalog for 99 cents, whatever. And then everyone hits your site. What happens, right? What happens when you have to now serve thousands upon thousands of concurrent users? Did your website design account for concurrency and massive scale? You could rush, obviously, to the cloud, and hopefully that might save you. But ultimately, you need to assure that when you're building out software today, you need to make sure that you're answering those questions that often come up too late in the practical process. So we need to ensure that we're accounting for that in our design. Unit testing is one that speaks near and dear to me because I'm a developer, and it's something that I've practiced for many, many years, but I still see today many customers not utilizing. And it is really a great facility that's in place that you can take advantage of today. And the reason why unit tests are important is because you could get into the whole metric debate about coverage and things like that, but unit tests actually give you a way of formulating your code in a way that makes sense to the developers, so that when they're actually writing their unit tests, they're exercising their code, but they're also exercising it in a way that makes it more natural for them to write their code. So you may think about development processes like test-driven development, TDD. These and other sort of practices come into play when utilizing unit tests. Moreover, I mentioned continuous integration. Continuous integration, again, is this process by which we exercise code upon builds. This is immensely valuable because it gives us a feedback loop during our development cycle. And the great news is with products like Team Foundation Server, you can quickly and easily establish continuous integration as part of your development process. It's very simple for you to create these types of build processes and get them running today. And that really has no overhead to your software development process. And then this one we'll talk a little bit about in the next few slides is the fact that the defects are commonly found by customers. This is not a good thing. You do not want this. And we have data that points to the fact that this tends to be the majority of the time, that the defects that are found are typically found by customers, which leads to a non-optimal experience. And so how can we change this? How can we get better? Well, we do that through process, and we couple that with tools. To get a little bit more specific about this last point here, I wanted to cite some statistics. Over the last several years, according to the Standards Group's Chaos Report published back in 2009, projects, they did these analytical reports, and they studied projects which were either challenged or failed over the year, and they're seeing some worrying trends. They found that the average cost overrun for projects being about 45%. That meant that when you went to the original stakeholder, you said, please give me X number of dollars to build out this project. And then at the end of that iteration, you need more money to actually support the completion of that project. That turns out to be a pretty uncomfortable situation. Another statistic is, obviously, the amount of time it takes to implement these projects. They found on average 63% were overrun on their time allocation. So not only are you now over budget, but you're not delivering on the time you promised to the stakeholders. And then finally, the average amount of functionality for every project was 67%. So now you've gone over budget, you've gone over time, and you're under-delivering what was expected. This is a very uncomfortable conversation to have with the stakeholders of your company. And we're not just making up this data. This is data that has been supported by analytical study groups and have looked at the overall trend of what is going on in the industry. And so it's a bit alarming, right? I mean, this is why we have stereotypes that we cited at the beginning, that the projects that are being delivered in the software industry in general, we have some problems when delivering those projects. And so we need to actually find a solution to this. Now, I mentioned before defects found by customers. There was a report published by NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technologies, back in 2002. And remember, this is $2002. They found that there was an equated cost of $59 billion, that's with a B, lost in productivity in the U.S. alone due to software defects. That's a huge number when you consider just the amount of software that's out there. The estimated yearly losses were around 64% of that cost absorbed by the users of the software. And if you think about it, these are the people who are paying you for your software, and yet they're the ones finding these defects. Now, I'm not claiming that, you know, Microsoft is perfect when developing software. Surely we have produced software that has bugs. And it's just a natural process of building out software. There are inherent, because software is written by humans and humans are imperfect, there will be natural times when software is generated that doesn't meet the expectations or has buggy characteristics to it. But the good news here is that you can get on top of that. And we at Microsoft are doing this internally, and you can as well. There are processes and tools in place that you can utilize, and we're going to highlight some of those. So again, 64% of the cost borne by end users. Not a good story. So what does this all mean, and where do we need to go? Well, hopefully you're kind of thinking I'm building up to something. And yes, there are many methodologies out there. And you know, there's a lot of research and analytical data that's out there citing, you know, agile methodologies, software methodologies that enable you to be a little bit quicker to market, get more feedback, be more prescribed to the ALM story or the application lifecycle management story. There have also been a number of reports that have been generated. Some notable folks like Forrester and Gartner have published reports saying that there is a trend within the industry that's showing that more and more companies are moving more towards methodologies because they give you a sense of predictability. They also have tangible wins associated with instituting those methodologies. So moving away from the waterfall-style approach of software development to a more iterative process turns out to have a lot of benefit. And whether or not you prescribe to that, that's your issue. But we're seeing that overall the industry is actually moving in this direction. So how does that actually bridge the gap between processes and tools? So at Microsoft, obviously I've shown you Visual Studio, there is that underpinning part of Visual Studio as well as other tools, which is Team Foundation Server. And if you haven't really looked into Team Foundation Server, that's okay. We'll explain a little bit what it is here. But we really think of Visual Studio and Team Foundation as your ALM enablement platform. Really, these two in concert really provide a really nice solution going forward. And for the scenarios where we don't actually have a solution set covered, that's where partners like Joel, who will be up here in session three, talking about their solutions and the experiences they've had with customers. But really, you can break it down into the following criteria that ultimately drives to a goal of turning business ideas into software. The first one of these is end-to-end alignment and visibility. We really want to gain visibility into our software projects, see what needs to be done, when it needs to be done, and who's doing the work. We also want to get a sense of what is our trending? Are we going to be finishing on time? These sorts of predictive questions we need to be asking ourselves as developer managers. The second one is ensuring that we have quality throughout the lifecycle. And we really took this to heart with 2010. With Visual Studio 2010, we really put an emphasis on making sure that the software that you're building is done correctly. And correctly is sort of one of those subjective terms, but we have instituted tools within VS to enable you to do that job much more in a much better way. So tooling and support for things like continuous integration, static analysis, being able to analyze your code in a number of different scenarios, the test integration, and other facilities, which I'll show you in the demo, these and other types of capabilities allow you to ensure that that quality bar is as high as possible. And then third, but equally importantly, is the ability to build for change. So your business is not going to sit in a vacuum, and it's not going to be isolated from everything else. Obviously, things change in the marketplace. The recent economic downturn shows us that things can turn on a dime. And your group, your development group, needs to adjust just as quickly and pivot just as quickly based on the business needs. So that turns out to be something that we need to complement through tooling. And we have the ability to do that, but we also need to ensure that that's enforced through processes. All right, so I mentioned before that there are maybe a few folks in the audience here who have maybe never seen Team Foundation Server, and they're kind of wondering what is it all about. Team Foundation Server provides a whole host of capabilities and analytics for you to use for your projects. Team Foundation Server is really the heart of your software development process and allows you to really get a good sense of what's happening, when it's happening, and how it's happening. So with Team Foundation Server, we have an overarching set of process templates. These are atoms that really define the way in which we go about developing software with Team Foundation Server. As in concert. It gives us also a whole host of capabilities as part of TFS itself. So when we talk about version control, that's part of that story. But also things like test case management, the ability to actually working with QA and the testers of your team, being able to ensure that what is being tested is going through the scenarios that have been outlined by users. Build automation, this notion of continuous integration, again, deeply supported within TFS. Reporting is one that I think a lot of us care about because it gives us visibility into what's happening in the project. A lot of this stuff is done for you automatically. So in addition to Team Foundation Server and the integration with SharePoint, we also provide reporting server as part of SQL Server so that you can actually get these really nice reports generated to show you things like velocity of your projects, the burn down rate, things of that nature that give you that visibility to make calls ahead of time saying, yes, we're on time, or yes, we're going to achieve what we've set out to achieve, or no, we're not going to achieve this, or we need to allocate more resources to this particular iteration. These and other questions you can answer with the data that we provide through these types of reports. And the reality is, prior to TFS and other systems in place, it was really hard for us to go around and figure out what was going on. You may do this yourself, but I certainly remember as a developer, my developer manager coming around saying, you know, how far along are you? 20%? 50%? You know, can I check you off this work item here? And things of that nature. We have a question here in the audience. I think we're going to answer a question. Is it a short question or are we going to save it for the edge? Great question. So the question from the audience is, whatever happened to Project, Microsoft Project Manager and the Project Office scenario? You're going to see that in a second, sir. We're not done building this out yet. So Project Manager, you may have latched onto. The reason why is because when we think about project management, we're thinking about things like how process templates and that how that overarching governance actually determines how those things occur. Now, underpinning this is a new capability called lab management. One of the things that we're obviously hearing from a lot of organizations is the fact that we work in concert with QA, and you're not giving us the tools and abilities to be able to work effectively with them. So your IT pros, your QA people, they need to provision servers, labs, environments. They need to recreate the scenarios that you're trying to get them to test against. And also, it's hard for us to share that data in a meaningful way to our QA so that they can test and iterate over the bugs that are coming in. So for that purpose, we have introduced in 2010 lab management, which is this ability to actually give them the tools as well as the integration points for them to be effective. So there's a whole host of stuff that goes in here, but long story short, it is really there to facilitate a better relationship with your QA. Now, obviously, we've touched on Visual Studio. We've simplified the product offering a little bit. You may remember back prior to 2010, there was a bit of different SKUs that are available. We've simplified the model now so it adopts a more Russian doll model approach, which means as you move up the stack in terms of versions, you're just gaining more functionality. The reason why I say that is because in 2005, 2008, the way in which we had the additions spec'd out was you would go down a certain path, and then there would be a fork in the road, and you would have to determine, well, if I don't go the whole hog, meaning Team Suite, I need to pick and choose the features that I want from various product additions. And so we kind of had a bit of a loggerhead, if you will, for customers wanting to make this decision. And so we've simplified that model now. And so now we have three editions, Professional, Premium, and Ultimate. And then, of course, Test Professional, which is that integration point with lab management and testing. Now, the gentleman's question here around what do we have around project management, to the edges, we have a lot of integration support. So on the right-hand side, we have Team Explorer, which I showed you in Visual Studio. We also have Web Access, which is through our browser. We also have extensibility throughout the product. So you're going to hear Joel talk about solutions from Telerik, namely Team Pulse, which integrates very well with TFS to provide a whole host of other capabilities not currently supported in TFS or not there in TFS. And he really complements that story immensely well. On the left-hand side, we have integration with tools from like Office. This includes projects, so the ability to actually take the work items that I've propagated in TFS and then spit those out and integrate very seamlessly with project, creating Gantt charts and things of that nature so that I can manage my projects in the tooling and in the manner to which I am accustomed. And so we're not trying to break that workflow. We're trying to complement it, and we're trying to integrate within TFS. There are other tools as well, Expression, our design tools, SharePoint, our collaboration tools, et cetera. Now, before we jump in the demo, I just want to take a little bit of time here and explain the process by which all of this works. Now, certainly, we're not dictating process here. We're just simply showing you how this actually can work within TFS. On the right, we have our developer, our hero who's cutting code. This is the man I am akin to. On the left, we have our business analyst and tester. And typically, the process is one where we craft out user stories. These are the requirements. These are the bugs. These are the various things that we need to implement as part of our project. The developer then, from there, will construct or formulate a series of tasks. These are concrete items inside of TFS that they can work against. These have time estimates. These have analytical data. These have metadata associated with it. From there, the tester gets involved and constructs a series of tests. Step one, step two, step three, in order to reproduce and verify that the task has been completed in a correct way. The developer will go ahead and issue check-ins and hopefully issue builds as part of those. And I say hopefully because not every organization will utilize Team Build, but they should. They will utilize continuous integration and as part of that process, generate artifacts for testers to use. Those testers will then work against a series of tests that they've outlined against those builds. And then if necessary, if those tests break, we'll issue bugs back into the system, and those bugs can then be resolved. So you can see we have a feedback loop simply as a, you know, if you think about ALM, this is sort of a microcosm to that feedback loop where we're working within the three stakeholders of our company, analyst, developer, tester, working in concert to ensure that what they're being asked to do is done correctly. And so those bugs feed back into our TFS cycle, and then life goes on. Now, another question that comes up is, what about non-.NET developers? There's certainly a lot of organizations who are doing iPhone development with Xcode, or they're doing Android development with Eclipse, or they're doing, you know, name product or whatever that you're doing development for. What about those folks? So one of the key parts or one of the top design aspects of TFS is its support for extensibility. Pretty much everything you see being surfaced up through tools like Team Explorer or the web browser integration is surfaced up through service endpoints. So what that means is we actually enable tooling and tool vendors to actually integrate with that as part of their development process through their tools. We've also taken a step further. We have a product called Team Explorer Everywhere, which integrates with Eclipse. So if your developers are working with Eclipse for Java development, for example, they can integrate as part of that workflow very, very succinctly using that extension. And we provide that as part of the Eclipse offering. And so really, as a holistic approach, this is what we're thinking of when we're taking this. Now, obviously, these roles can adjust and be thought of in different ways. But ultimately, they map to a series of products, which you see here listed on the slide. So the tools that you're used to this gentleman's point over here, the tools that you're used to don't change. We simply complement and ensure that there's an integration story. So it turns out to be really nice from that perspective. Now, I touched a little bit on process templates. These are really the sort of lifeblood of your projects within TFS. And really, if you think about TFS, it is really a process-enabling engine because that is really what is really guiding or providing governance over your projects. So out of the box, we ship with some project templates that get you started. But the good news here is that if you don't like the one that we ship or there's a different one that you want to use, maybe for SDL, Secure Development Lifecycle, those can be deeply integrated within TFS itself as well. You can use those ones or you can adjust them as well. There are many tools that allow you to do that. Joel and his team have obviously got some experience there with that. But process templates there to be adjusted and to really complement your workflow. And we're not trying to actually enforce some change within your organization, unless, of course, you want it, right? So that's there to provide governance. Now, I say that it's really the lifeblood of your project. When you're working on projects, whether as a developer manager or as a developer, one of the things that you'll come across is this notion of a work item. As I said before, TFS is a process-enabling engine. If you think about it, work items are the verbs, the actions and nouns that get associated with the things that you're doing. So things like tasks, bugs, user stories, whatever it is that you qualify as those things that need to get done as part of your project, that's how we actually encompass those ideas. Work items are incredibly powerful because they can be associated with a whole host of metadata. So you can do things as part of a testing scenario, like take screenshots, video captures, dumps of processes. On the iteration side, we track everything for compliance purposes, but also for historical purposes as well. So every check-in that you do has a historical retrospective that you can see. This integration is complemented through source control. But there's a whole bunch of things that you can also do as part of work items themselves to really complement your process going forward. And so work items turned out to be a really powerful mechanism within TFS to ensure that you're building your projects both on budget and on time. The data that goes against work items, like the check-ins and the resolutions of those work items, actually feed back into the reports that are generated. So you can see these automatic reports generated on the fly as those work items are being resolved, and you can get analytical data that shows how you're trending over time. And that's really important for a lot of us in this audience because a lot of us are obviously managing projects. So it turns out to be immensely important. So I want to get back to what Christian said earlier about the three critical success factors of any software development process, which is people, processes, and tools. If you think about it, TFS is really that tool component that bridges the gap between people and processes. And so as I mentioned, out of the box, we give you enough to get up and running. But if you want to, you can either use third-party solutions or customize to your own needs. And so we're not enforcing any particular workflow. We're simply complementing what's already there. So enough talk. Let's get to a demo and show you some of the other parts and pieces of TFS and VS. So let's jump back into my demo environment here. And you saw in the example here that we're showing off IntelliTrace, this black box sort of testing integration here, which is really nice. I'm going to stop debugging here, and I'm going to jump over into my Team Explorer. Now, for project managers, one of the tools that you'll know and love, obviously, is Excel. So one of the things that we provide is the ability to plan iterations as part of an agile methodology. So here I can go into Excel, and I can see all of the user stories that have been, the stories that have been outlined, either resolved or active stories that I need to complete. So here we have a product backlog. You can see I have not only the ability to give these a title, like what needs to be implemented, and remembering this is going against our website, which is our Tailspin Toys site. But we can also assign the amount of story points for each story. So this is the amount of work that will be allocated for every story that's been specified here. We scroll over to the right, you can see we have things like the iterations that we've defined, as well as the areas of the project that is affected by this user story. So I can go in here, for example, and I can do a variety of things. I can specify new user stories, I can define new iterations, etc. In fact, let's just do just that. I'm going to go ahead and edit this workbook. This is a server workbook that obviously is integrated with TFS and allows me to propagate changes between TFS and the Excel workbook that I have here. So I can go ahead and do these changes. And just to complete the story, this is actually coming from Team Explorer itself. So our project planning Excel spreadsheet is really what we're dealing with here. And I can go ahead and iterate against these things very quickly and start defining new iterations. So we're just doing a network call here. And actually, let's see if we can get another one spun up. This is where we're ensuring and praying to the demo gods that everything will connect appropriately. But just while that's connecting, I'll just show you how this project is outlined here. So you can see that I have my various documents here. So I have iteration 1, iteration 2, iteration 3. I also have the ability of taking a look at the various other reports that we've generated. So these reports allow me to see the various trends within my organization against work items that have been either resolved or checked in. So here I can see what is the progress against bugs, what is my test activity looking like, what's my code churn and code coverage analytics looking like, etc. So I get lots of great analytical data there. So here we are back. Great. Now, I can jump over to the iterations here, and you can see as part of our workbook, we have actually some rich charting capabilities. So here what we've defined is we have a third iteration. We can give it a start and end date. So I'm going to go ahead and give it a start date of Monday, April 4th. And our end date we're going to define as the April the 8th. So there we can see this is a short iteration of 5 days. That's auto-calculated. And we can now assign various members to that iteration. So we're going to say that we have a team of 3 members working on this iteration. And now what we can do is we can go back to the project backlog and start assigning items to that iteration. So let's take a look at some of our items. We have, obviously, as a store administrator, we can perform various functions. So I can do, say, let's assume that these ones are ones that we want to iterate against. So we'll go ahead and define this as iteration 3. And we can go ahead and start defining those changes to the iteration itself. And then that data will cycle back and allow me to assign various users to those iterations. This turns out to be immensely important, especially when we're thinking about how we scope out our various iterations and how they actually have an impact on our projects overall. So this will go ahead and save those changes back to the share. And then I can propagate those changes simply by navigating over to the Team Ribbon tab here and saving those changes back to TFS. What that will ultimately do is propagate that data back to the server and allow it to be surfaced in a number of different ways, whether it's through VS. So in VS itself, I can go ahead and take a look at the various work items that are defined. So here I have work items defined for each iteration. And that data will get surfaced out through Visual Studio. Or I can utilize tools, as this gentleman cited, things like Project, and see how that impact will occur against that assignment. So jumping back to our iteration here, now you can see that now that I've defined those user stories against this iteration, you can see that I have planned the following story points against this iteration. So you can see that we're upward trending. And now what we're showing here is in the blue, we're seeing this is what's being planned. What's in green is what's being delivered. So when we start taking a look at this data, we can see how can we assign various resources? Are we overutilized? Are we underutilized, et cetera? So jumping to our team, we can jump back into our project backlog here. And now I can choose, if I wish, to publish that data back to TFS. So let's go ahead and do that. And we're going to go ahead and publish that change back to TFS. And now what we can do is we can now take a look at iteration 3 and start planning those features and functionality. So if we go now to iteration 3, this is our backlog for iteration 3. We'll go ahead and pull up that Excel spreadsheet. And what this will now show us is the various stories that have been outlined in that backlog, and allow me to assign various users to that backlog and now start accomplishing tasks. This turns out to be really nice because as developer managers can now start focusing on what's possible from an iteration perspective. So this is taking its sweet time, which is great. So what I'll do is I'll just jump quickly to another thing I wanted to show you. I mentioned before that in 2010, we took a very strategic approach around ensuring that there's a good relationship between the developer team and the QA team. And one of the sort of artifacts that came out of that is this iteration for test management. So here we're actually showing you the test management tool. And what this allows you to do is quickly and easily get a sense of what are some of the tests that are being defined for your QA and how you can iterate over those tests, as well as what are the environments within which I want to do my testing. So for example, I can go ahead and jump into iteration 2. And here I'm being brought into the testing center for that iteration. For iteration 2, you can see that as part of that process of working with QA, we've defined the following tests that need to be conducted. Each one of these tests are written in a human-readable format, so you can actually read these and understand what we're trying to test. And in addition to that, we can also see the series of steps that need to occur in order for that test to complete or fail. So for each one of these tasks, we can define a whole variety of test cases. We can also define various configurations or requirements for each one of these iterations. So you can see here we've surfaced out the work item data as part of the testing center information that's presented here. You can see here that I get a detailed description of what is occurring. That is correlated back to the iteration itself, and I can see the various parts and pieces that I need to be responsible for when looking at this. These can also propagate in the form of how my environments are set up as well. So I can take a look at the various configurations. You can see up here we have a default configuration here of Server 2008 and IE8. So here we're defining some of the configurations that are necessary for us to test our software. And that turns out to be really important because when you think about how we integrate with labs and with QA, they obviously have provisioned a number of servers and environments from within which they need to ensure that the tests are run and run well. So we can actually define these configurations, we can see how they're assigned, and then work back against that from an iteration and planning perspective. So these testing environments allow us to run those tests accordingly. Now, I can go ahead and take a look at the various tests that are defined, and I can run against them, and then report back those test results through TFS to see whether they passed or failed. And you can see some of the results of that. I can also do things like tracking. I can define new queries against my work item database, see the results of those, and then see how each one of those testing environments are being set up. In addition to that, we can also jump into what's called Lab Center. And Lab Center is really where we define the various environments within which we want to do our tests. So here we can integrate with Hyper-V and provision new environments. We can set up those environments quickly and easily, and then provision them and then do testing against them. So here I can define a variety of environments as well as templates, and I can set those up accordingly and then do my tests against them if I so wish. That was sort of me tap dancing here on stage while I was waiting for the iteration backlog to come up. So here we have our iteration backlog. We can go ahead and take our work items here and assign them accordingly. I'm going to take a look at iteration 2 here just quickly. And what we're going to see is how we can assign various work items to the iteration itself. And as we do so, we can see the impact of things like interruptions as they occur against our assignments. So interruptions are things like holidays or scheduled items on the calendar for your organization. These and other types of interruptions are a reality of any project management cycle and need to be accounted for when obviously planning out your iterations. And so we can go ahead and define those very, very quickly. So we can either do that accordingly here, or we can obviously take a look at our backlog through VS itself. So here's our iteration 2 backlog. You can see that this is the same data that's being presented through Excel. So here, if I were to take a look at the Excel spreadsheet, I would see the exact same data here. And what we're doing here is we're actually showing you the child-parent relationship between user stories and tasks. So here, up at the top, we have a series of user stories with associated points, but underpinning those work item tasks that need to be done by my development team. So my development team can concentrate on implementing those tasks, and we can see accruals against them. And then those will roll up into user stories. We can either promote or depromote various stories. So we can promote them to a root element, or we can demote them to a child element. We can also do various things with these iterations. So here, the gentleman's point about where's the integration with project. I can take my second iteration here and now open this iteration within Microsoft Project. So if I wanted to get a clearer sense of how this is actually working within the scope of a project, look and feel, I can go ahead and do that. I can also, as I said before, see how this actually propagates within something like Excel. So here inside a project, we have our various items. This is our second iteration. We have various tasks associated with them along with the expected cost. And there are ways in which to actually forecast costs within project. We can see the time to completion. We can see the start and finish time. We can also see the title of each one of those and get a better sense of how those things actually operate. So again, the point here is not to change the behavior within which you work, but really just to complement that process. Over here in iteration 2 for the Excel spreadsheet, you can see that I have various interruptions defined potentially. So any team members that go on holiday or sick leave, any holidays defined, these and other things I can go ahead and outline. I can also take a look at the capacity of my team. So here, I can see that in this case, I haven't actually assigned any team members because I'm overutilized. But I can get a better sense as I assign team members, that chart will automatically be updated to show me how overutilized or underutilized am I for this iteration. So as I'm defining individuals and assigning members of my team to this project, I can see the impact of those assignments. I can also see the burndown chart here that will show me basically the trending that is important to me as a project manager as my work is being completed. so I can get a sense of, are we going to finish on time? These and other types of questions are important, especially as a manager, when thinking about role assignments and work item allocations. I can also define various settings associated with the iteration, like the start and end date. So these and other types of facilities are there for you to take advantage of as a developer manager, and is simply surfaced up through the tool set. Again, our purpose here is not to change your workflow, but rather to complement it. So that's sort of the story there. Now, jumping into VS back again, as I mentioned before, you have the ability to change and modify these items simply through the ID as well. But the main motivation here for surfacing this information through Excel and Project is to work within the scope and landscape that you're used to. There are other ways in which you can actually work with these work items. There are other integration points as well. Outlook is a common scenario where people face that they want to work with various assignments and work items within Outlook. You can do that as well. And there are various integration parts and pieces which you'll hear about in session 3, namely with Telerik and other partners like Urban Turtle and others who integrate very well with TFS. And that really speaks to the integration story and extensibility story we have as part of TFS itself. There are many other things that you can see and do as part of TFS in terms of the guidance we provide through process templates. You can see here we have various reports that are outlined as part of the report infrastructure we provide as TFS. So the ability to see bug trends, bug statuses. I can see our build rates, success builds, etc. Showing you some other things here. We also have process guidance. So process guidance is sort of that metadata, that human readable sort of data that you might want to take a look at and get a better sense of how these things actually occur. You can go ahead and launch those ones and see how they actually are defined as process templates. We can also see the various templates that are generated for various aspects of your project itself. So if you're thinking about the various personas that are present within the methodology that you're utilizing as part of TFS, that process template, we have templates that allow you to get a better advantage of how to utilize those things. So we define these as templates, and you can go ahead and surface that information out through a variety of different means. So again, Team Explorer is one integration point. We mentioned Office. One thing that we're not going to cover here, but we can talk to, is obviously integration with non-.NET development. Obviously, that's through things like Eclipse. But everything that's surfaced up here through Team Explorer is present through a set of series of service endpoints that are callable on TFS. So TFS will present that data and allow you to get information about that in a very rich way. So again, from a high-level perspective, there's a lot to know. And obviously, there's a lot of parts and pieces to it. But as you explore what's there from a TFS perspective, I think you'll be delighted to see that a lot of the thinking that's gone into the product really takes into account all the roles that are in your organization. So not only testers, but also developers and developer managers. So as we're thinking about that and we're building out the product, that's something we need to ensure that we keep top of mind. So I wanted to just summarize and give you a sense of really sort of the top-level things you might want to think about when considering TFS and VS. TFS and VS enables you to gain greater visibility and predictability into your projects. I showed you some of the reporting that we generate automatically and the integration parts and pieces we have with Excel and with Project, etc. But that turns out to be really critical for you as a developer manager when considering how you're outlining and allocating your resources. More importantly than that, of course, is that it bridges the gap between your people, processes, and tools. This chasm that exists between those three entities is often too great. And as we said before, it's the merging of all three that really determines the success of a project, because they are all equally important, but in concert, they are the ones that really help you define and deliver on a software project. And then finally, we want to ensure that TFS and its workflow and its integration with things like process templates is more prescriptive than directive. We want to make sure that what the workflows you've instituted within your organization can be maintained or can be adjusted according to the process templates. And so we have a flexible integration story there. Those process templates can be modified or adjusted accordingly to your needs. And that's really what Joel is going to really be talking about in the next session. I wanted to save some time for some questions. We have about 10 minutes left. So I wanted to open up to see if there are any questions about what I've talked about here today. Yes, sir. The question is, the template I was showing, he assumes, was the Agile template. And yes, that is MSF for Agile 1.0. We ship, the question is, we have other templates as well. Bring back to the slide here, I'll just show you the some of the ones. We ship with CMMI, we ship with MSF Agile. There's one. There's other ones that other people want, like Scrum and other process templates. Obviously, there's a lot of different thinking about this. Joel and others have a series of tools and process templates that are available. There are templates from other third parties as well that you can incorporate as well. You can adjust these accordingly. There are a series of secure development lifecycle templates available as well. So if you're thinking about security as a first-class citizen, which I encourage you to do so, those are available there as well. So as I said before, there's a bit of a TFS is a process enabling engine. The processes that we ship out of the box are there to help get you started. They're adjustable. But there are many third parties that offer up process templates that you can use as well. And you can think of like TFS as a platform, and there's an ecosystem around that platform providing process templates. Great question. Any other questions? Yes, sir. Great question. The question is, where does TFS fall into the MSDN subscription model? And I will preface this by saying I'm a developer. I'm not a sales guy. And I sometimes don't, I'm going to play a bit of the ignorant card here. To my understanding, TFS is available for free as part of MSDN subscriptions. We have two versions of TFS, one which is for obviously full-fledged sort of server environment, etc. But there's also an interesting version of it which runs on your, you know, standalone. So you can actually get TFS running on a Windows 7 machine as an isolated sort of environment. But you can also go to the full-fledged version of that if you wish. The good news is, if you know, MSDN subscription is a great way to get access to software, and TFS is part of that story. If you're not an MSDN subscriber today, I highly encourage you to do. Get out there and get a subscription, because the benefits are immense. They're quite well. I don't know how I would do my development. And prior to joining Microsoft, I didn't know how I would do my development without a subscription. It's that vital. It really is a critical aspect of building for our platform. I hope I answered that right. All right. I'm getting the smile and nod from the back, so that means I did. Great. Any other questions? Yes, sir. Okay. The question is the testing suite included as part of that TFS model? I don't have internet here, but there is a web page that does an immensely good job of showing. There's a page that we've put up that gives you the breakdown of products. You can get certainly Test Professional as is on its own. TFS, again, is free as part of that. No cost available as part of that, so you can iterate with that. But it is part of that. The way that our thinking around that tool has been written specifically so that, you know, a developer may not use that tool. And the reason why we developed that tool is because we understand that testers and folks in QA have different needs and requirements. And so we want to make sure that the tool we offer provides a very good environment from within which they can do their job. And so that's the motivation for us providing the test center and the test management capabilities. That being stated, there's also the lab management side of it as well. And so utilizing and relying upon a tool like VS for the one IDE to rule them all is not a very good starting point, because for a lot of folks like IT pros who manage QA labs, or for testers in QA, they're somewhat turned off by VS because it's a big, daunting thing to them. So that's part of the motivation for doing that. So Test Professional is part of that story. There's a great slide, website you can go to. If you just do a search using Bing, for MSDN Visual Studio products, you should come across a page that does a very good breakdown. It's a table structure, and it shows you version by version, product by product, what's available, and who they're appropriate for. And that they do that, they do a very good job of breaking that down. So that's a very good page to reference. Is that a question here? Sure. So the question from the gentleman here is, we touched a little bit upon continuous integration and how does that integrate with, say, non-Visual Studio environments. So the answer I'm going to give you is the elevator answer. It's the 30-second answer. But as you go into it, you'll discover more about that. When you go, actually, I can show you. Inside of VS, I'll just see if I can quickly show this to you. There's a section defined for builds. And builds are defined on the server. So these are builds that are iterated and defined upon on the server. And the server is really what takes control. So when you do check-ins, no matter where they come from, you have a series of steps that can occur. So either enforced through policy. So when TFS first came out, we instituted policy, which said, you know, every we have these source control policies that say, the check-in must conform to the fact that there's a unit test associated with it or just code coverage. We now have gated check-ins as well, which allow you to do things like allow you to do staged or workflow check-ins so that you know they have to be approved by someone. We also have shelf sets, which are things that allow you to put stuff on the server temporarily against the server. But for builds, as those builds occur, we kick off a workflow. So these builds are actually defined by our Windows Workflow Foundation, and you can define them, and they'll kick off, and you'll be able to you'll be able to do a variety of things as part of the build itself. So I can take a look at all build definitions here, and I can also define new builds. So I can define a new build definition here, and I can go through the series of steps. It's sort of like a wizard, but it gives you a series of steps that you can do. So if, for example, I wanted to find a build that does continuous integration, I can go ahead and define that process and say that for every check-in that occurs against this branch or against that segment of my source code, I want to go ahead and iterate and run unit tests, for example. I can also do gated check-ins. So, for example, I want to make sure there's a workflow that it does submissions and acceptance tests from a senior team member in my organization. Or I can schedule them. So there's a lot of flexibility here for you to take advantage of this. And you can define what the working folders are. You can also define build defaults. So if you have environment variables, things like that. Sorry, clicked the wrong menu. You can also define the process that is defined for this build. So the process here is the template, which is defined as Windows Workflow. It's a XAML file, which is a markup declarative language. And you can define the series of steps that occur during a build. And all this is running against on the server. So it turns out to be immensely powerful from that perspective. We provide this very simple UI on top of that. But you can certainly dive deep into it if you want to take a look there. So the question is, it can kick off a Java build. Well, the builds defined are using MS Build, which is an XML-based build definition. And so if you wanted to, you could certainly integrate Java C, for example, or CL for C++ or whatever. There's an extensibility story as part of MS Build itself. So these are custom tasks or integrated tasks that you could kick off. And so as part of the integrated build, you could define a very simple build step that says, fire off Java C, compile, push the outputs to this directory, and make them available. But you could also go to another, you go to the nth extreme, which is like, you know, run them against a static analysis process, do unit test integration with it, which is continuous integration, dump the files here, version them, et cetera. These and other steps you will define as part of your MS Build file, which is all XML declarative based. I hope that answers your question. We have 2 minutes left. Yes, there's we'll take a question from the online folks. They've been so generous with their time. Great question, guest 8527. The answer is yes, it does. So the question is, does TFS integrate with non-Visual Studio environments? The answer is absolutely. So as I mentioned before, we ship as part of we have. So we did an acquisition of a company that provided an integration part for Eclipse with TFS. We acquired that company, and as part of that, we made available Team Foundation Server, or sorry, Team Explorer Everywhere, which is that exact window you see inside of Visual Studio, but now running inside of Eclipse. There are many other integration parts and pieces, of course, because TFS is more than just source control. There are many other things that need to be involved. And so for that, we have a rich ecosystem of partners and companies who are building great solutions on top of TFS, and you'll be hearing from one of those folks very shortly. Great question. There was a question in the middle. I think we have time just for one last question, so apologies for that. Great question. So are there any things that we can do around deploying scripts to SQL Server, for example? There is a feature that I have been absolutely in love with for years, and this feature has been around since 2005. Not many people know about it. This is database projects. You may remember DataDude was the source code, the code name for this. These can be integrated as part of your solutions. So what the long and short of it is, database projects are, if you're doing anything with databases, and I don't know anyone who isn't, so likely you all are, you really should take a look at managing your databases utilizing the database projects we have within Visual Studio. Why? Because it offers a whole host of features that you oftentimes would have to roll yourself. It shocks me how often companies are utilizing DBAs to cut T-SQL scripts and maintain those T-SQL scripts manually. That facility is built to do that automatically within VS. And within VS, you have this section here for databases. And there are other partners who are building other management stories around other databases as well. But what these projects allow you to do are various things like schema diffs. So you can do a diffs in schema and auto-generate T-SQL scripts from that. So as I go from version 1 to version 2, version 3, or back, I can generate those T-SQL changes automatically, and it will just determine what those are. I can do data diffs. I can also do data generation plans, which is, a common scenario is I'm doing testing, and I see this more often than not. Developers fire up SQL Management Studio, and they start manually writing data into their database. It's like, I need something to test against. And you're like, you can use a data generation plan because that will create for me a million rows of dummy data, and it will do it just like that. And these and other things you can automatically do within these project templates. And what's better is you can actually integrate that as part of your build. So as part of your build, you can say, for example, continuous integration, run unit tests, but before that, create all this dummy data, propagate the schema to this database, this temporary database, put in all the dummy data, run the unit test, delete all the data, and back out. You can do all of that within VS, and it's an immensely powerful feature that no one uses, unfortunately. I don't know why. It's such a cool feature, but anyways. We have time for, I guess, one very, very last question, so from the online audience.
So we have a question from guest 8411. I wanted to know, does this software run on non-Windows machines?
Why are you laughing? obviously with Eclipse, that's a bit of a different story. But if you're talking about TFS, no, there's a requirement on there for Windows. So, great. Well, I just want to wrap up with a couple of different slides, and then we're going to have the lovely and vivacious Joel Semenyuk come up and share his thoughts. So this is the next session we're going to be taking a look at, real-world software development management, bringing to life what we've covered through real-world examples. And then, obviously, resources. We have a whole host of resources. The one URL you want to remember is alignit.ca. All the PowerPoint, everything we've described here is available at microsoft.com/alignitresources. There are two resources in particular I want to draw your attention to around application lifecycle management. There's a self-assessment site that you can go to, which is at that shortened URL there. I'll leave the slide up for just a few minutes. You can go to bit.ly.com/whack/whatever, and you can go to bit.ly.com/whack/bleh for the MSDN Center on ALM. So the MSDN Center on ALM is an ALM portal that gives you a whole host of information around ALM. So white papers, bloggers, tweeters, people on Twitter, and a variety of other sources that you may find valuable. when looking at ALM from that perspective. Don't forget, cloud is immensely important for a variety of reasons, so we want to make sure that you can take advantage of this. Go to windowsazurepass.com, utilize the promo code AlignIT, and there you'll be able to sign up for 30 days for free for Windows Azure. Great. We're going to take a 5-10 minute break, whatever the break is, and we'll have Joel Semenyuk come up and join us. I'll leave this slide up. Thanks a lot, guys.